Hey there, welcome to another episode of Close to the Vest. My name is Arthur Ettinger, and I am super pumped for this episode. I have Jeff Hunt, who is the director of Kate's Educational Services. Jeff, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
So this is, I know we haven't known each other for a long time, but this topic is actually really, it strikes a chord for me because personally and professionally, I deal with people like you all the time. And I have a 17-year-old son, as you know, who has been dealing with the college admission process. And as a matrimonial lawyer, we here in New York, we deal with college counselors all the time. So I think you have so much to share for listeners. And I think you have an amazing background, which makes you a special person. So I would just love to just dive right in and just, could we go to just, let's start with the background and how you got into this.
Sure, yeah. I grew up north of Boston. I'm a Sox fan, sorry.
I won't hold it against you.
You'll try not
now,
to.
Now, it's a lot easier to do that.
Right,
now.
It's postseason. So I went back and forth to England and the States for school. Did most of high school here, did a little bit of high school in England at my dad's old school. Came back to the States for most of college, then went back to England for a semester. And then went to grad school for teaching after a short stint in publishing, about 7 years, and decided to teach here in the city at a public school called the Beacon School, sure, which is really competitive school. I think my last year there, they were getting something like 7,000 applications for 300 spots or something crazy like that. Taught there for 8 years, history, law, economics, government, all kinds of stuff. And then left to do experiential education, taking students out into the field. So I led students to Australia and Belize and for 4 summers, the Navajo Reservation, which was incredibly special. And then came back to the city and worked for a couple of nonprofits, the first being Chess in the Schools, that uses chess as kind of a hook to get kids whom otherwise might not apply to college to do that. And that was sort of how I got to know Kate's, was because I hired Kate's to do our SAT prep program. And I kept asking more and more and more of the Kate's folks, and they just kept saying yes. So I kept in touch with Chris, who was the founder, and just kept the doors of communication, our lines of communications open. And so when I was laid off in mid-pandemic from another organization called Breakthrough New York, I wound up seeing that Chris was looking for a director of enrollment, and it's really more of a business development position. But I also get to still work with parents and students, and so I kind of get the best of all of it. And so here I am, and this is, you know, thanks so much for having me here.
Let me, before we get into like what Kate's does, as an educator, do you like, you now are, whether you like it or not, you're on the business side. So does that impact you in any way?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So somebody asked me a while ago, gosh, you know, do you have a hard time moving from sort of pure education over to sales and marketing? And my first thought was, anybody who has taught seniors second semester, if you don't know marketing and sales, you probably don't have a full classroom, right? And so I think it's incumbent upon teachers to really tell the students, this is why you need to know this, and this is why you should care about this. And so for me, it was a pretty natural progression from one to the other. The business aspect, you know, there are certain aspects that, you know, as a nonprofit person, I just never had to really think about. So that's an adjustment, but none of it's difficult. My, you know, my, before I ever got into education, I was in the corporate world. So I worked for Barnes & Noble, I worked for Borders. So it's not like I don't know what profit and loss means and all that kind of stuff. And I've also owned a small retail corporation as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Comics and games and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a couple of stores, one in Northampton, Mass, and the other in Westchester, up in Mamaroneck.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a huge nerd. Any kind of flavor of nerd, that's...
I remember as a kid, I had a lot of comics, but I was really into the baseball cards. And I remember, you know, just really getting fleeced on my comic collection because I was really focused on my baseball card collection.
Well, I think you and I are roughly the same age, 50 something.
Yeah, 51.
Ish. Yeah. You'll be happy to know that those comics now are probably not worth very much.
Well, it's the same. Yeah, it's the same as baseball cards.
The market just dropped out.
Right.
So you may have gotten fleeced, but ultimately it's probably not like you were going to be able to pay for your kids.
Yeah, I recently got over it, so it's all good. But it's funny because they say that your experiences make you who you are. And I have to believe that even doing that helps you because you're dealing with kids all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And especially in the work that I'm doing now, it's really helpful to be able to relate to students who maybe they're not interested in history or maybe they're not interested in what I'm interested in, but the you know, having the broadest possible experience means that I can have touch points of connection with students and with parents, because a lot of what we do is really about listening and drawing people out and getting us to tell them their stories, just in a very similar way to what you're doing right now. Teaching is all about the right questions at the right time. So, yeah.
So that's interesting. And when we've spoken, I don't remember you telling me that, you connected with Kates during the pandemic. Talk about drawing them out. Like, I used to joke, you know, hurting. My older son was different. He had his own challenges because he was going to a new school during the pandemic, you know, moving out of the city. But my little guy, I joked, it was like hurting cats. And now you're in a new environment and you're dealing with kids in, you know, a new virtual world. And now you have to draw them out to whether it's tutoring or dealing with college essays and in a situation that has been turned, excuse me, completely upside fucking down. You know, that must have been a super challenge.
Yeah, the folks that I know who were still in the classroom during the pandemic, I think they are all dealing with really significant vicarious trauma. I cannot imagine what it must have been like being a teacher during the pandemic. You know, we at Kates were really lucky in some sense that we had been working with students on Zoom and Google Meets and all of these other virtual platforms. We've been doing this for 10 years before the pandemic. And so we were really set up to be able to sort of hit the ground running. Now we're finding that the students who have grown up during the pandemic, you know, there's still a lot of socialization that needs to happen. And so we can certainly help with that. And we're also seeing that students maybe are less sure of what their options are because they haven't been able to, you know, spend a summer abroad necessarily. They haven't had the same range of experiences maybe as you and I had when we were kids, just because, my gosh, 3 years, everything was, as you mentioned, like supremely fucked up. Yeah.
So let's take a step back for a second and just explain what Kates is.
Yeah, so Kates is an acronym. It's Chris Ajamian Tutoring and Education Services. So it's a bit of a mouthful. And so Kate started as just sort of subject tutoring. Chris was a double major at BC, and I think he was pre-med and theater. The only person I know who's ever been on like the Patch Adams sort of path. But he wound up sort of creating this company, and we do pretty much everything academic or education related. So from tutoring little kids, you know, we started this new program called Kate's Advance, which is helping younger students sort of meet and exceed the targets that either schools or the DOE sets for them. And that's either a summer program or an in-school program. So we do that kind of thing. A big part of our work is advising students long-term on what their education path should be. And so we will start with students in seventh or eighth grade, kind of start laying out, you know, their plan for what they're going to study in college, what their first jobs after graduation might be, that kind of thing. One of the things that we are seeing is that the admissions process or the admissions results are so much more competitive now than they ever were.
So
I would never have gotten into Skidmore, let alone Columbia, where I did grad school.
That's the conversation I have like on a daily basis. We joke like, you know, Northeastern and Wisconsin, you just needed a pulse, and it is so hard.
It's great. Northeastern is one of the hottest schools in the country. They've got a great program there. And it's, you know, it's not for everybody, but for the man, for the students who are ready to kind of seize that, it's an incredible opportunity to get that, you know, real world experience as well as a good classroom experience as well.
So you're talking about like seventh, eighth grade. There are people out there who, first of all, are probably saying, wait a second, what do you mean college counselor? Now you're telling me I needed to have my kid enrolled when they were in seventh and eighth grade, and now I'm just maybe considering this in 11th grade. Are they screwed?
No, they're not screwed. So we definitely start working with some families in 11th grade, sometimes even 12th grade, right? First semester, 12th grade, we get panic stricken families who maybe they've worked with another independent counselor. And I talked to somebody the other day whose counselor, who came with a really good pedigree, said, don't worry about leaving grammatical and spelling errors in the personal statement to your college admissions essay. And I don't know who this person was, and there's no disbarment procedure for IECs the way there is for you all. But that person should be hounded out of the kind of work that we do. It's insane. So we, you know, there is our preference is to start working with students really early. And part of the reason why is because number one, college admissions is so difficult now. Especially if you want to be top 50, top 20 schools. The other thing is that there's an expectation now that students shouldn't wait until college to really start exploring in meaningful ways what they want to do with their life. You want to be working for NASA? Fantastic. Show me what you've done. Have you been taking college classes? Have you been, you know, working at a lab? All of this stuff. And these opportunities are out there. But families, you know, you're busy doing your law thing. And, you know, it requires an expert. Just like if I was going to get divorced, I'm not just going to represent myself. I'm going to bring in an expert like you. If families are really serious about getting their kid a leg up, this is now what's really best
it's
for the
scary
kid.
Because like, you know, I sit here, I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up, you know, but I think there is, having been in the trenches, there is such a value, you know. When we grew up, I certainly had nobody helping me with my essays, and I had a little bit of PTSD. I remember like not being able to go to a Halloween party because my applications weren't done. And I agree. I think, you know, it probably took me a little bit longer to get and wrap my head around the concept. But just like you said, you have a doctor, you have a dentist. I think if for people that are able to do it, it's a really valuable resource. And there are, I'm sure I have a lot of questions. I'm sure the audience has a lot of questions. What, explain, and I know you offer tutoring, but let's just focus on the college counseling. What exactly, what services do you provide the student that for the families that engage you?
Yeah, so it can be anything from helping create a college list. You know, where do you want to apply? There are something like 4,000 schools in the United States, and it's a lot of work to apply to a school. You know, there are supplemental essays, and you really, you have to look at yourself as essentially as a product. And the whole thing is a marketing or branding exercise. And you're not going to market or brand yourself the same way to University of Chicago and Brown University. If you do that, you are fundamentally misunderstanding the process. So that's one thing, is really making sure that whether you're working with us or whether you're doing it independently, you research the schools and you understand very deeply how the schools differ from each other. This is probably the second biggest investment that most people will make in their life. The worst possible outcome is going through it and then not graduating with a degree and paying some, you know, god-awful amount of money for 3 years and then never graduating. So we want to make sure that there's a really good match. So that's the number one thing that we do. But we'll also help students study for the SAT or the ACT. We can help study for APs. We can.
So that's important. I just want to interrupt you. I'm sorry. There's a lot of college counselors and conversely tutors that say, I'm a tutor. I'm a college counselor. I'm not blurring the line. So you guys actually, it's basically one-stop shop.
It is, yeah. And we certainly, with a couple of exceptions, there's no one person who can do everything, right? We've got, you know, engineers who work to tutor computer science stuff. Guy who's actually working on AI, Andres. And he's our go-to guy for comp sci AP. We have somebody else who's interested in and really capable in working with, you know, exactly the right essay for a student who is applying to an arts school. So it's really, you know, again, it's about finding a specialist and making sure that match is a good match. You know, another one of the things that we do is working on the application essay, the personal statement. It is probably the single most important piece of writing that most students will do up until this time. And it's only 650 words. But I've worked with students. Yeah, that's the 650 is the limit, right? And then there might be these shorter supplemental essays that could be 100 words. But it's almost like poetry in that you have to get every word just so. And it's, you know, if the whole college process and the essay especially is this opportunity for a student to really understand for the first time in many cases, you know, who they want to be, what they want to do with their lives, and what impact they want to have on the world. And that's part of the thing that is just so exciting about working with students to do this. Because if you do it with enough time, it's this beautiful process of self-discovery. The problem comes when it's, you know, summer after junior year, and mom and dad are screaming at each other, which is probably where you step in, or, you know, son or daughter is, you know, tearing their hair out because their anxiety is, you know, through the roof. And all of that can be avoided if there's a long enough runway. Sure. So just, you know, parents just need to make sure that their students have that runway if they want to avoid all that kind of conflict and strife and get the best sort of end product, essentially.
Yeah. And what separates you guys? Because there's so many that has popped up. You know. Listen, we can only speak for here. Maybe before I get to you answering that, is Kate's only located in New York, or do you service beyond New York?
We're all over the world. So Chris and I went to Singapore because we've got sort of a hub of clients there. We've got an office in London as well. Chris, the founder, actually lives up in Maine. So we will go anywhere and work with anybody. We've worked, I think, with people on every inhabited continent at this point.
And so what do you say to the person, let's say, that lives in Chicago? Well, and well, you're based in, you know, you're based in New York, and you've never dealt with, let's say, a kid graduating from my high school. What do you say to that? Because I hear those arguments, oh, that college counselor is based in Florida. They never worked with, you know, a student in the high school where my son or daughter are. What do you say to that person?
Yeah, so it's really not necessarily about knowing the school where they came from. It's about knowing the student. And that's really where, and you were asking before about like what sets us apart. We approach this as sort of a whole child, whole adolescent sort of person. And in order to do our jobs, whether this is SAT prep or LSAT prep or physics tutoring or the college process, we really need to understand the student. And so that is job number one, is creating a bond with the student and if possible with the parents too. To make sure that we understand who this kid is and what is best for them. Because a lot of the time, you know, families may come to us with a list of schools that they think like, these are the perfect schools. And it's just because, you know, well, mom went here and dad went here and grandpa went here and granny went here. No, sorry. That's, you know, your child is not just a reflection of who you are, right? And so we can step in and be the neutral arbiter and really do what's best. And a lot of the time we will get confessions out of the students that they would never tell mom and dad.
That. And that really rings true, especially in the context of doing what I do.
Yeah.
And we'll put a tack in that for a second because I definitely want to go back to that. Yeah. What are mistakes that, you know, that parents make besides, you know, injecting what maybe their personal preferences and wanting to live vicariously through their kids, whether it's the application process or otherwise? What other mistakes do you see parents making?
I think the number one mistake is that they think that the process now is like the process was when they went through it. It has changed so dramatically.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that.
That families, you know, they don't have to come to folks like us,
right.
But if they want it to turn out well, they need to do some research. And they need to do a lot of research, really. And it means going to visit schools and understanding deeply what that school is looking for and whether it's a good fit. I would say that's probably the number one mistake that families make, is they think that because, well, I went through it, it's just the same exact thing, right? And you know, that's like my dad, who went to school to be an engineer and who could always fix his own car, you know, up until probably the 1990s. And then, oh my God, there are computers in the car. You know, if he tried to fix our car now, you know, it's just a 2014 Subaru or something like that, he's still not going to be able to fix it.
So, like, I think to your point, you know, when we were filling out our applications, we didn't have the internet, you know, so there are resources abound. So to that point, if there are all these resources, you know, I remember these, like, getting into the car and just schlepping, you know, or that US News book, you know, that, like, and now you have all of this information at your fingertips, whether even right on the phone, you know, getting my kid to actually look at that versus, you know, TikTok or Snapchat. But so to that point, if you have all of that, those resources available, why the college counselor? Aside from doing the essays.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are also a strong proponent of, you know, use TikTok, use, you know, whatever technology the student wants to use, meet them where they are. Right. And the colleges have been doing a great job of this. So, by all means, use that and encourage your students to use that. The problem is that any advice that comes through those kinds of media, that's going to be generic.
Sure.
And our kids are not generic. They're individuals. I know the education system in a lot of ways doesn't like to treat them like that because it's an industrial system.
Right.
But, you know, we don't just say there's one kind of shoe that everybody should wear. There's, you know, 4,000 colleges. Figure out which one's the right one for your kid. And so that's part of the reason why. And unfortunately, especially at the public schools, the counselors, through no fault of their own, are overworked and undertrained in a lot of cases. Something like 400 to 1 is the college counselor ratio.
Wow.
Like, you can't get to know 400 people in a year. It's impossible to do that job. So it's not their fault that they're overworked. And that's, again, part of the reason why we can step in and take some of the load off of their backs.
And do you guys have relationships with, let's say, individuals on the other side? You know, do you just... Jeff and Chris know people in admissions at the schools?
In some cases, yes. We don't claim to know, you know, everybody in the field. That's pretty difficult. There's a lot of turnover. But, you know, I tour colleges, Chris tours colleges. We get to know the admissions folks, in some cases professors. We go to conferences that help us get to know admissions personnel and their perspective. I went to one where I heard somebody from Stanford talk about the use of AI in writing college essays.
Oh, wow.
And this is the Wild West right now. There are no rules. There isn't a single college in the country that has any rule that we've found about whether or not students can use AI to write their college essays. And I'm here to tell you, it is a huge mistake if students do that. And it's not that it's going to be horrible as far as the writing is concerned.
Right.
It's just going to be an average. And your kid is not an average. The essay is the way to stand out. And AI is completely truth agnostic. And so they're going to, the Times actually had a really interesting article about this from September 1st, where they had somebody write some, or they had their AI write some college essays. And it was just lying. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is write an essay for a college, send it in, and then they'd say, well, no, we actually know that's not true, because that's the surest way to get to the no pile.
Yeah, that's so wild. You know, actually, on the legal side, if you file a copyright application, you actually have to clarify if a portion of your application is generated by AI. You don't have to delineate, you know, but in any event.
That's coming for schools. It's just the AI kind of revolution only really hit, ChatGPT hit after the application season had really closed last year. And the colleges don't have enough time to figure out what the heck is going on. I suspect the next year or two, most schools will have some kind of rules about what you can do.
And this is my next topic. You remind me, you know, there was a recent Supreme Court decision, you know, which impacts your role as a college counselor. And, you know, you and I think when we first talked, you know, my older son plays baseball. He played baseball for a team that was, he was the only white boy. You know, he was on a Dominican team out of the Bronx. And I loved that. And I loved his experience. And we joked that the college essay was literally writing itself. And that's not why he played on the team. But he, and then the decision came down and the person that he worked with had to take a step back and rework the essay. So has that, has the affirmative action decision impacted your job in any way?
Impacted, yes. I actually would maybe take issue with what that college counselor did, because the way the court structured its decision was that it basically said, you can still use race as a factor, but you have to be more nuanced than just check the box, right? So working in issues of race and background and ethnicity, all of that stuff into the application, you can absolutely do that, and you should absolutely do that. The schools really want to know who you are, where you come from, and they really prize diversity. And that's geographic diversity, religious diversity, everything. And those essays are how one of the big ways that they get it. The schools are really scrambling because, again, they prize this diversity, and affirmative action was a way that they used to do that, what they consider to be relatively easily, right? Those check boxes. Now, I suspect what's going to happen is that the colleges that have the money and the resources to invest in this kind of nuanced search for, great students who are coming from, whether you want to call it disadvantaged backgrounds or first generation backgrounds, whatever, they're going to be able to do that. But especially colleges that don't have those resources, I don't know what they're going to do. So, colleges with smaller endowments, I think, are in a real pickle. I think they're going to wind up with whiter campuses than they want in many cases. I hope I'm wrong about that.
I think because this is so new, that decision, I think the council was more, let's just err on the side of caution. And, so there's a lot of discussion. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but for somebody out there who may be dealing with this issue, do you have any strong feelings one way or the other about, the whole test optional? Do I submit my tests, rigor in classes? Can you just briefly speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge proponent of the test optional movement, first off. I think students should never be reduced to a number. There are sort of two ways that we've found that will almost immediately double, triple, quadruple your chances of getting into most schools. The first is being able to submit a SAT or ACT score that is at or above the median for that school, right? Now, if it's going to be Harvard or MIT, it's going to be one score. If it's Skidmore, it's going to be another score. But doing that will boost your chances tremendously. But it needs to be at that median or above level. And, the skills that students get from studying for these tests are transportable to other areas of their life. And so I think they are worthwhile preparing for. But at the same time, students should know that it's not, if they're not a great test taker, or if they try and for whatever reason it doesn't work out for them, there are something like 2,000 schools that are good schools that don't require these tests. And so it should relieve some of the pressure. I don't know that it has, because I think there's a lot of confusion out there. And again, if you really want to kind of win this game and compete in those top schools, you probably shouldn't consider them optional, even though they consider themselves optional in many cases.
And before you mentioned, one of the benefits of CATES is that you have specialists. And I think that's really valuable. Athletes, whether, it's a reality that it's an issue in the application process. So what do you do for, let's say, a student athlete? Yeah. You have the resources there.
Absolutely. We work with a wonderful guy named Michael Muska. And we partner with him. He was a D1 coach himself. He was on the admissions staff at a couple of really prestigious universities. And so he has a real focus on supporting student athletes. And it's really wonderful to see what he does because he's been there himself. He was a student athlete himself. And so it's really great seeing him work with the students and drawing them out in the particular way. And it's very similar to, you know, whether you've got a star athlete or a kid with an incredible voice who is going places in the music industry or whatever. And so it's, you know, again, those specialists are super important. So yeah, Michael is really wonderful to work with, especially for those sports.
And if you can just briefly just explain, like, fee structure, how do you work? Like, is it hourly based? Is there like, because I know it can range, and it also different people work differently. So just educate the audience if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah. So we work on different bases depending on what the family wants and needs. So in a lot of cases, we'll just charge hourly, and that fee structure will depend, the specific fee will depend on the expertise and experience of the particular tutor that we're working with. Or for families who are looking for a longer term engagement, we can do packages of hours, or we can do what's called an all-in program. And those are for families who are really looking to invest significantly in this kind of work and are looking to really buy into the process, because it's a long process, and it's not, you know, something that we can get done in 5 or 10 hours. And so, you know, there are some families with whom we will work for not just through middle school and high school. We'll continue supporting their students through college and grad school, and we'll help them apply to, you know, for business school or law school or you know, med school, stuff like that as well. Yeah.
So I have to come back to it. I told you I was gonna, you know, I'm a matrimonial lawyer. I've litigated whether or not the, you know, it makes sense. Is it appropriate to get a college counselor? Which college counselor should we use? So can you just speak to, I'm guessing you must have some interesting stories. It's a reality whether we like it or not. You know, people get divorced. So can you share any challenges or any words of wisdom for those scenarios where you're helping a student and the parents are either in the throes of it or are split?
Yeah, we definitely do have lots of clients who are divorced or separated and heading in that direction. We've actually had clients, one of the partners is in the prison system.
Wow.
Or heading in that direction.
It makes it certainly easier as far as communication is
concerned. Well, it changes things for sure. but, you know, we don't require that the family even get along. What we want, I mean, in some cases, we are almost like family therapists, and I'm married to a family therapist, so sure. I see the similarities there. And so, you know, I think the biggest advice I can give, or the best advice I can give, is, you know, come to it with an open mind, and come to it with a clear agenda, and don't hide things. Be upfront about what you need, what you want, and try and understand the difference between those two things. And a good counselor will help untease the matrimonial issues from the education issues. And, you know, we say that while we work with the student, the parents are really our clients, because those are the folks in virtually every case who are paying us. Yeah. But we a lot of the time we'll ask parents, like, listen, I think now is the time for you to step back, because you have hired, you are investing in expertise. And again, if you were, you know, if you've got a client who thinks that they understand the law better than you, you know, there's an old saying about fool and sure, representing themselves, that we ask for, whenever possible, calm, clear communication. And as long as we have that, we can make virtually anything great work.
It's amazing how clear communication just solves a lot of issues.
If I learned how to communicate better as a kid, I probably would have gotten married at, you know, 23 instead of 53.
Let's talk about that. So you just got married. What words of wisdom do you have for the listeners about what makes a marriage successful?
Ooh, yeah. Gosh, my wife should really be here as the therapist. I think that what she would say, and I totally agree with, is the open communication. And open communication has so many different benefits, and the reverse is true too, that, you know, Erin, my wife, always says that if there's a problem, for example, in the bedroom, the problem is not really in the bedroom, it's probably everywhere, and that it's about communication. And so, you know, if you grew up in a family like mine, you know, pretty WASPy, not, you know, there was really no conversation about unpleasant conversations, including emotions, work to get better at that. And it took me decades of work. And really, I credit Erin, my wife, for kind of helping mold me into a better communicator, as well as some good therapy, honestly. Yeah, therapy is great.
I love it. So how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I've got my name is Jeff, but I've got this weird spelling. Thanks, Mom and Dad. So my email is geoff@katestutoring, all one word, .com. Or they can give me a call. My number is 347-859-5107. They can come take a look at our website, katestutoring.com. We've got a lot of free resources there that I love directing families to. You don't even have to give us any information about yourself. You can just go on there, look at our webcasts, our podcasts, our webcasts, get a lot of free resources and educate yourself. If you don't, you know, not all families have the ability to hire an organization like ours, but that's a big part of the reason why we don't just work for individual families. We do a lot of social impact work with nonprofits.
Oh, wow.
You know, the biggest nonprofit education organization, or most impactful, I think, in the whole UK, the Sutton Trust. We have been working with them for years and years.
Can you just speak to that? What do you do?
Yeah, right now we're doing their ACT prep, their test prep, but we've also, you know, worked with organizations in Africa to help organize the ability for students to come from really significantly disadvantaged backgrounds and come to the States for schools.
Wow.
And, you know, that takes a ton of work.
Sure.
But we love doing it, you know, and again, that's how Kate's found me, and I found Kate's, as I was working with a lot of first gen families who would never been able to afford individual work. And that's why I love Kate's, is because we really do try and balance out the work that we're doing for families who can afford us, and the work that we do on behalf of families who can't afford us. And it's one of the things that I really appreciate about Chris's vision.
Yeah, that's great. Is there anything else you want the audience to know about you or Kate's?
Gosh, I mean, it's one of the interesting things, you know, when I talk about Kate's at our weekly meetings, I almost always focus in on all of the education stuff. We're also a tech company. And so we have been working with the state of Maine to create this platform where teachers from all over the state can share ideas. And so they can go on and they can learn from each other and teach each other and share lesson plans and all this stuff. I would have killed for something like this as a first, second, third year teacher.
Sure.
And it's really nice seeing that, you know, we're not just this education company, we're also a tech company, and we, you know, we do all, we've got our fingers in a lot of different pies. And so it's really nice that the organization has this kind of range. So I'm happy to talk about any of it, but you know, if families have questions, I don't know if the company always loves when I say this, but I love giving away my knowledge for free, and I'm happy to talk to anybody on the phone or you know, whatever. And I love going to families' houses. Yeah, well, thanks. I love going to people's houses or apartments for, you know, small groups of like three or five families and just talking about, you know, how this crazy system works and how to get an advantage out of it. And I do it for nothing, and I love doing it. Part of me really misses teaching, and this is the closest I get to it. So I love working.
Thank you for doing that. That's awesome. So I have one last question. It may be the hardest question that I ask you. I'm a big sneaker guy. Okay, so I ask every guest at the end of my episodes, what is their favorite sneaker?
Oh, that's a great question. So back in 2016, I walked across Spain. So it was about a 500-mile walk. And I wore a pair of Salomons.
So you did you, well, this was like intentional, like Forrest Gump, I'm going to walk across.
There's this pilgrimage path that people have been doing for over a thousand.
I actually know. One of my ball players' mom just did.
It's an amazing experience called the Santiago. Have to edit this out. The Camino de Santiago, and people have been doing it for hundreds and thousands of years, and it's this lovely experience where you get to meet people from all over the world. Sure. A lot of people do it for religious reasons. Most people at this point don't. They do it for other reasons. I went because, you know, I've been hearing about this ever since college, because it's mentioned in Don Quixote, and it took me this long to actually get there. But the shoes that I wore were a pair of Salomons. The exact name of them I couldn't tell you, but they're available at REI where I got them. And they were incredibly light and incredibly durable, and I wore them every single day, and they were amazing.
Awesome.
So
I love it. Great answer. Well, listen, you know, it's been a while since I filmed and I've done this, and this was really great. I really thank you for coming in, and I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. It's been a real joy. I appreciate it.
Awesome.